All right, tip divers, welcome back. You know how much we love a good listener request, and this one has us ready to dig in, so to speak.
I do love a good pun.
So, outdoor growing basics. Our listener is itching to start growing, and they've got a stack of guides from plant food and equipment companies. A great place to start, but maybe a little overwhelming.
Absolutely. It can be a lot to sift through. Luckily, they've got us to help narrow it down to the essentials. A successful first-time grow, that's the goal.
Music to my ears. Now, I see plant type mentioned a few times, ambitious but doable, right?
Definitely achievable. But that brings up a key point. From all these guides, planning and timing are crucial.
Right, like where do we even begin? It feels like there's so much to consider.
You're telling me one of the guides, I think it's the Professor Green one, really hammers that home. A solid plan is everything.
Makes sense. So before we get into the nitty-gritty big picture question pots or open ground, always a hot debate.
Always. And you know, those guides actually address that right off the bat. It's almost like they know it's a common dilemma.
Well, they do seem to be geared towards beginners, which is perfect for our listener.
Exactly. And for a beginner, I will say, those pots offer a level of control you just don't get with open ground. That Germination Outdoors guide in your stack, they're all about that mobility.
That's true. I've definitely learned my lesson about the whole space limitations thing with pots. Tomatoes, man, they get big.
Yeah, don't they though? But that's the beauty of pots. Say a sudden hailstorm rolls in, just whisk those babies to safety. Try doing that with a whole garden bed.
Okay, that is a serious point in favor of pots, especially for someone just starting out who might not be prepared for those sudden weather curveballs.
Exactly. Although, speaking of things to be prepared for, location is huge EE, no matter which method you choose. Like, where in your yard will those plants get the most consistent sunlight?
And what about wind? I'm picturing those poor little seedlings getting tossed around like salad.
All the guides mention wind protection. If you're going with pots, obviously you can move them around, but in the ground, you might need to get creative with natural windbreaks or fencing.
Working with Mother Nature, not against her. Although, let's be real, sometimes she makes it tough. Like, how do you even plan for the unpredictable?
Right. It's a balancing act for sure. Like sunlight, for example.
Yeah.
Too much, and you risk, get this, shriveling. That's
Yeah.
straight from one of your guides.
Shriveling. Wow. Traumatic. But okay, so even sunshine can be too much of a good thing. What happens then?
Basically, too much sun can mess with nutrient absorption. It's like trying to eat a giant meal when you're already stuffed. Not going to end well.
So we've got to find that sweet spot. Okay, what about the flip side? Too much rain.
Ah, yes. Remember all those warnings in those guides about drainage and soil? That's where they come in.
Oh, right. Because soggy roots are not happy roots.
One of the guides describes it as the roots drowning, not the kind of water feature we're going for.
Yikes. Okay, good drainage. Got it. Speaking of things that can go wrong, what about those mysterious nutrient deficiencies they keep mentioning? Okay, so nutrient deficiencies, that sounds a little intimidating.
It's definitely something to be aware of, but luckily those guides give us some tools to, diagnose the problem.
Right, because we can't exactly just ask our plants what's wrong.
Exactly. But they do give us clues. Those visual cues the guides mention. That's how we know what's up. Take phosphorus, for example. If you see purple veins in the leaves,
Purple veins, is that bad? It sounds kind of cool.
it is pretty cool looking, but it's not a good sign.
Yeah.
It means the plant isn't absorbing phosphorus properly. Now imagine those leaf veins, but instead of turning purple, the spaces between them start to yellow. Like a little roadmap on the leaves, that's a magnesium deficiency.
Okay, starting to see how those little signs can tell us a lot. So what do we do if we see those deficiencies?
Don't panic, it's usually fixable. The guides offer a bunch of solutions, and we'll dive into those later. The main thing is pay attention. Early detection is key, and those guides really equip you to do just that. Now, ready to talk about everyone's least favorite gardening companions.
Ugh, you know that's my least favorite part. Okay, this is what I always worry about, creepy crawlies, ruining everything. Which ones are the worst offenders?
Well, the Professor Green guide calls slugs and snails public enemy number one, and honestly, it's not far off. They're like those friends who show up to a party just to raid your fridge, except instead of leftovers, they're after your plants.
Ugh, the slime. Snails I can handle, but slugs give me the heebie-jeebies.
They definitely aren't winning any beauty contests. But speaking of unwelcome guests, we've also got spider mites, tiny but mighty. You might not see the mites themselves right away, but keep an eye out for their calling card. Fine, delicate webbing on your plants.
Okay, so keep an eye out for tiny webs. Got it. Any other villains we need to be on high alert for?
Aphids, they're like the teenagers of the pest world, always hungry and hanging out in large groups on new growth. You'll know it's them by the white cast skins they leave behind.
Okay, that's both helpful for identification, AD, a little bit repulsive. I appreciate that honesty. So we've got snails, spider mites, and aphids. How do we even begin to combat these garden invaders?
Luckily, both guides offer some pretty solid strategies. Let's start with those slugs and snails. One guide refers to the barrier method, almost like building a tiny wall around your plants. Crushed eggshells are a classic. Those sharp edges are no fun to slime over.
Okay, I'm intrigued. We're talking about like a tiny moat filled with broken glass?
Not quite that intense, though, fun fact, some people use copper tape. Apparently, it gives those slimy critters a tiny electric shock.
No way. So it's humane pest control, but with a little ZAP. I like it.
Exactly. And for a more hands-off approach, both guides recommend diatomaceous earth. Sounds intense, right?
Diatomaceous earth? That does sound pretty intense.
It's basically fossilized algae. But here's the thing. To slugs and snails, those tiny particles are like shards of glass. They steer clear. The guides reassure us it's harmless to humans and pets, though.
Okay, good to know. I'm all about keeping things eco-friendly in the garden. What about those sneaky spider mites? Are we going to electrocute those, too?
As satisfying as that would be, spider mites call for a different approach. One of your guides recommends a surprisingly simple weapon, a strong spray of water. Turns out, those little guys hate moisture.
So like a tiny power wash for our plants, I can get behind that.
Exactly. And if plain water isn't cutting it, insecticidal soap or neem oil are also good options mentioned in the guides. Natural solutions, but they get the job done.
Working with nature, not against it. Which brings me to a question about those aphids you mentioned, beneficial bugs earlier. Tell me everything.
Ah, yes. This is where gardening gets really interesting. Both guides talk about inviting beneficial insects to your garden party.
Okay, I'm picturing a tiny ladybug bouncer, only letting in the good bugs.
Not a bad visual. Mm-hmm. But in all seriousness, ladybugs are like aphid-eating machines. They love to munch on those pesky little sapsuckers. Some guys even suggest buying ladybugs online or from garden centers to release in your garden.
Whoa, so you can just order a ladybug army to fight your battles. That's way cooler than I expected.
Right. And if ladybugs aren't your thing, the guides also mention lacewings and even parasitic wasps as natural aphid control.
Parasitic wasps? That sounds straight out of a sci-fi movie.
It does, doesn't it? But they're actually quite harmless to humans and other beneficial insects. They just really, really don't like aphids.
Okay, that's reassuring. So we've got options for days. It seems like a big takeaway here is about observation, right?
Absolutely. Both guides stress that. The quicker you spot a problem, the easier it is to fix.
Makes sense. It's much easier to shoo away a couple of slugs than to deal with a full-blown infestation.
Exactly. And speaking of infestations, remember our pots versus open ground debate. This is where things get even more interesting.
Okay, I'm ready for round two. Hit me with those pros and cons.
Well, the pest control aspect definitely leans in favor of pots. You got that added layer of control, being able to move plants around to avoid pests or even bring them inside if necessary. Open ground might require a bit more vigilance.
I'm starting to think pots might be the way to go for a first-time grower. A little more control never hurts.
That's a valid point. But let's not forget the unique benefits of open ground. One of your guides mentions companion planting, a fascinating technique where you strategically plant different species together for mutual benefit.
Companion planting, that's a new one for me. The guide mentioned marigolds. What other plant combos do they suggest and why?
It's all about using nature's defenses. Marigolds, for example, are said to repel certain kinds of nematodes and whiteflies. Planting those near your more vulnerable veggies can act as a natural deterrent.
That's so cool. It's like creating a little plant ecosystem where everyone thrives, except for the pests, of course.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of outdoor growing. It's all about observing, experimenting, and finding what works best for your specific environment. But speaking of finding what works best, we haven't even touched on the actual planting process yet.
You're right. We've covered so much ground already, literally. But I am curious about one thing mentioned in the guides, something called the Ice Saints. It sounds a bit ominous, don't you think?
It does have a sort of mysterious ring to it, doesn't it? But don't worry, it's not as spooky as it sounds.
Okay, good. So less about spooky saints and more about practical gardening advice. Got it. What do these ice saints have to do with my future garden?
Well, one of your guys mentions that planting too early can be a real rookie mistake. Those tender seedlings.
Yeah.
You really don't appreciate the Praha's frost.
Right. Makes sense. So we're playing it safe, waiting till the coast is clear, temperature-wise. When is it generally safe?
Mid-May, usually. The guides suggest waiting till then, when the risk of frost has significantly decreased.
So it's a waiting game.
They actually call it that. A gardener's patience test, waiting for those warmer days. And speaking of preparing our plants for the great outdoors, have you heard of hardening off?
Okay, hardening off. That's one of those terms I hear thrown around, but I'm not 100% sure what it means.
It's like a boot camp, but for your seedlings. Instead of going straight from the cozy indoors to the great outdoors, you gradually introduce them to the elements.
Got it. Like a slow and steady approach.
Exactly. Start with an hour or two of outdoor time each day. Increase it gradually over a week or two. That way they get used to the sun, the wind, all those temperature fluctuations. And when you finally plant them, it's not such a shock to the system.
Hardening off, definitely adding that to my gardening vocabulary. Okay, so once our plants are acclimated and those ice saints have passed, how do we actually go about planting?
Both guides actually break it down into some pretty clear steps. First things first, you got to choose a good location, well-drained soil, good amount of sunlight throughout the day, and then it's all about digging the right size hole.
Okay, so bigger is better when it comes to giving those roots space to grow.
Not necessarily. You want it to be slightly larger than the plant's root ball snug, but not suffocating. One guide uses this analogy of a comfortable bed for your plants.
I like it.
Too big, and the roots might get lost. Too small, and they won't have room to stretch out. It's all about finding that sweet spot.
The Goldilocks zone. What about supporting the plants once they're in the ground?
Both guides are on the same page here, gently firming the soil around the base of the plant. And then, of course, that first good watering is essential.
It's like we're tucking them in, all cozy in their new home. This is making me want to run out and start planting right now.
And you know what? It might be the perfect time to revisit our pots versus open ground debate one last time. Now that we're at the planting stage, any new insights?
Okay, hit me. I'm feeling like a more informed gardener already, thanks to all this.
Well, as we talked about before, pots give you that awesome mobility, which can be a lifesaver with unpredictable weather. You can easily move them to a shadier spot or even bring them inside if a storm rolls in.
Right. It's like having a portable garden. You can adjust it to whatever you need or whatever Mother Nature throws your way.
Exactly. Plus, with pots, you've got more control over the soil, which is a game changer if your soil isn't ideal to begin with.
Those are pretty compelling arguments for pots, but open ground still has its own advantages, right?
Oh, absolutely. One guide points out that planting directly in the ground lets those roots really spread out, which means potentially bigger, more robust growth. There's something to be said for letting those roots tap into that natural soil structure.
So if you've got the space and you're looking for maximum yield, open ground might be the way to go.
It could be. And there's also something really cool about creating that more natural garden ecosystem where your plants can interact with the soil and the beneficial insects. It's all about finding that balance between control and letting nature do its thing.
I love that. It's not just about following the rules. It's about understanding and why we're doing what we're doing.
Exactly. And honestly, whether you choose pots, open ground, or a mix of both, these guides, along with some good old-fashioned observation and experimentation, will set you up for success.
Well said. This deep dive has been so eye-opening. And you know what? I feel ready to get out there and get my hands dirty.
That's what we like to hear. It's all about the journey.
Exactly. Yeah. It's been a pleasure diving deep with you. Until next time, deep divers, happy growing.